All right, the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily resent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. I'm actually here, Guillermo Mash, on the Without a Roof radio program. We're trying to stream the audio here, and I was actually having some trouble, so hopefully I can take a peek at that in a minute or two. Give me a second, though, to actually introduce the program. And I wanted to kind of start off with a segment I'm calling Without a Roof Unscripted. And literally what I would like to say is I had a young lady that we'd reached out to all several years ago, and I've been following and helping her as best I can over the last, 2 years. And I got this message from her on Facebook today. I wanted to read that out to the audience. I don't think I could ever thank you enough for everything you did for me when I was struggling with my family. I'm not even aware that you knew how bad it was, but you're the only one that actually helped me in a healthy way. If it wasn't someone showing me kind love, I have a strong feeling that I'd be way worse than I was, and I think I might have given up completely, not even thinking anything could get help better. Not only do you help people, but you do it for nothing in return. I want to let everyone know that you change lives because you change mine. In my eyes, I will never repay you the way you deserve, but I can say thank you, and your kindness did not go unnoticed. The unscripted part, you know, I really kind of brought tears to my eyes. I've known this young woman for a while, but really this is an accolade to the folks we're going to actually introduce here in a second that are going to be pre-recorded on the program. But, you know, everyone's has an ability, you may not know it or not, to physically help someone. You know, maybe they don't reach back out to you and say you are just a wonderful person, but you can always be kind to someone, and you can get some amazing results like this young lady did. And I just really feel blessed to have been able to help her in the kindness. And that goes for Aaron Power Taylor from Friends of the Palco Marsh, which leads the show with an update from Eureka, California, where homeless advocates packed the city council chambers in defense of the roofless community against new anti-homeless ordinances on Tuesday, the 1st of September. We intro this story with a video newsreel from Channel 3 in Eureka and end with Ann Anybody's poem on homelessness filmed in Eureka at the 2014 Humboldt Edge one-year anniversary party. Abby Samuels from Freedom Sleepers is featured in the second half of the show detailing how Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and her have been working together to end criminalization of homelessness in Santa Cruz, California. We end this segment with a Without a Roof vignette filmed at the Chico Peace and Justice Center in the winter of 2013 titled FBI Terrorist Visits Peace and Justice Center. We also are going to do a forward promo for our October segment of the Without a Roof program with a trailer from Time to Listen. It features Gabrielle Duncan, a powerful advocate who still, as I understand, lives out of her car up in Seattle, Washington. And we have a 45-minute interview that we're going to air this coming October, next month. So once again, thanks for tuning in to KZFR Listener Supported Radio. And always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful. Wanted to say that Without a Roof is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and friends of the arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festivals and events, including Arttoberfest, Chico Palo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about the Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org and by Arttoberfest, Chico's month-long arts and cultural celebration. Once again, the Arttoberfest guide will be online at arttoberfest.net, and you can list your event for free by clicking on the Contact tab. Advantage Insurance, the Chico News and Review, Affordable Automotive, and Bill Carter Realty are proud to support Arttoberfest. So here we go with the program, and I just want to say, once again, thanks for tuning in to listener-supported radio, KZFR FM 90.1.
Well, it's an ongoing problem in Humboldt County, and it was addressed by a big crowd last night at the Eureka City Council meeting. News Channel 3's Sierra Jenkins was there as the city worked to tackle the homeless problem and joins us live now in the studio with more. Good evening, Sierra.
Good evening, Brad. The city introduced an ordinance last night pertaining to the storage of personal property in public areas and presented a management plan on how the city could protect its land along the waterfront. However, everyone was not in support of the cause.
This is the Palco Marsh today, after being cleaned up by the Eureka Police Department just last Thursday, an area the city wants to develop. However, hundreds of people have set up tents and established camps with nowhere to dispose of their waste.
Being a tidal marshland, it's extremely environmentally sensitive, and, you know, constantly pouring human waste in there, it's just getting into the rest of Humboldt Bay.
This issue was addressed at the Eureka City Council meeting last night, but before a protest outside of City Hall.
You don't feel like you can rise up when you're constantly being looked down on.
Council chambers were full of community members there to express personal concerns about the homeless.
The filth and the blight there. Where is the health department? Where is our environmentalists?
A new ordinance was introduced regarding the storage of private property in public areas. Section H of the ordinance would ban setting up a tent during daytime hours, stating tents can only be up from the hours of 9 p.m. to 6 a.m.
You can't take a tent down at 6 a.m. and before 6 a.m. in the morning with no light. And you can't put it up after 9 p.m. at nighttime with no light. In the winter hours when it's raining, when it gets dark at 6 o'clock at night, and it's storming, what are you supposed to do?
The city says over the past 9 weeks of cleanups, more than 134,000 pounds of trash has been collected, along with more than 300 hypodermic needles, 250 shopping carts, and 150 tires. Now, when I spoke with some of the people that live in the marsh, they claim that not all the blight is from them, that outside sources come in and illegally dump the larger items, such as the tires.
I've worked with tires. Some of the tires they showed on there were semi-tires. Those are 90 to 110 pounds a piece. And people ain't just going to carry those. Those are brought there and dumped.
Council also addressed its open space property management plan, which is a plan to develop the city's waterfront property into recreational use. When it was all said and done, council voted to table both items.
And I heard a lot of public comment about people not really wanting, you know, these folks in their neighborhoods. And so until we kind of put that into place, we've tabled it till January, and then we'll relook at it again.
The need for more affordable housing, a shelter, and or an official campground somewhere the homeless could live were discussed as alternatives. The Eureka Police Department says another cleanup is scheduled for this Thursday. Back to you, Brad.
Erin Powers Taylor, and welcome to the KZFR Without a Roof program.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And you fit me in into your schedule so wonderfully, Erin. We appreciate that. So tell us a bit about yourself and your passion for those without roofs.
And this is a passion that grows very deep with me. My children, their biological father passed away about 5 years ago. And when he passed away, he was one of the homeless in Eureka. At the time, I was living in Massachusetts, and so I wasn't there when it happened. We had broken up because of addiction problems, in which he had. You know, I had to love the children more than I loved him, and he had been my high school sweetheart. And he came back home, which is where we're from, Eureka, and everything. So he came back here, and within a year and a half, he had passed away at the age of 32. And I believe a lot of it had to do with the lack of hope that the homeless here have. And kind of in honor of him and our children, I feel that it's my responsibility to at least step up and be hope where they can't find it.
Yeah, bless you for that. Yeah.
Thank you.
God bless you for that. Now, I know I had a question around the Devil's Playground area. I know there's other places in Eureka that folks are forced to stay, but maybe you give us an idea what the Devil's Playground area by the mall looks like, including the makeshift safe spaces.
The Devil's Playground is actually called the Palco Marsh. It's an area that actually has a name. The name Devil's Playground kind of came out of media and chaos for about 20 years ago. It's been really easy to demonize the area just by the name. So as my group that I co-created, which is called Friends of the Palco Marsh, mm-hmm. part of our aim has been to demolish the name Devil's Playground, even though it does explain where it is, because if you say Pelco Marsh to many people here, they actually don't know what you're talking about,
right. Yeah.
Which is very sad. So down there, we have anywhere between 100 to 250 people live there. Right now, we're probably on one of our lowest levels, so I would say there's probably about 100. It's been known to have a lot of filth along with lots of people. Part of my group, along with being homeless advocates, is we are also very environmentally conscious. And so we actually work with them to better the area. We have cleanup days where we and the unhoused work together to keep things going. I also do a lunch every Friday where we sit around and we talk and we go, okay, so what do you need? What's going to happen? Here's what's going on. This is what I know. And to help kind of encourage them to empower themselves. Part of the group, we are also partly unhoused. So some of the residents down there are actual members and leaders, which I think is very important. It's important for them to speak up for themselves. Because I can tell, you know, I can say whatever I want in my privilege of having a house and all my privileges, but without them speaking up for themselves, then I can be easily ignored.
So let me try to explain the area a little bit. Maybe you can expand. But Devil's Playground used to be a wood processing plant, as I understand. It's right there on the bay / on the physical ocean. And maybe you could add or subtract to that for the listeners. But I'm really curious because you seem to be very connected with this issue, both from a humane perspective, environmental. As I look at this from outside looking in, Aaron, I mean, the city, as I've done in many other places, it making this look like they're just trashing the whole place and this is an environmental disaster. And they're, you know.
Okay, so the area in which we're talking about is a piece of property that is behind our mall, the Bayshore Mall here in Eureka. It is wetlands. It is right along the bay, right there. The ocean is right there. And it used to be a mill many, many years ago. And it kind of got just left. And there's many remnants of the concrete from the old mill sites. And it's pretty much kind of out of the eye. And so that seems like a protective place for our houseless to go. It had been severely ignored for a very, very long time, even though people have been living back there for 20-plus years. And not until recently has it become this attention thing for the Eurekans to get angry at. There is crime sometimes, but so is every neighborhood. It's just easy to condense everybody into one population of homeless or houseless individuals. Back when I was younger, when I was like in high school, people would go back and do these beautiful graffiti art on the concrete. And it was such a popular thing that people would go back there just to see them. You know, it was kind of an honor if you had a tag up there. And there's years and years of graffiti on top of graffiti that are just beautiful. So at one point, it was pretty accepted and acknowledged that there was people back there. Of course, not at the rate that we have now. But it is a beautiful area. Yeah, there's a lot of environmental issues going on with it. But if you put, you know, that many people without the ability of facilities like running water and bathrooms and stuff like that, you're going to have some environmental damage, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just for me as an advocate, I think the city well knows that. I mean, the city, I'm hearing that, you know, we need some place that they could go and be safe, and that's all that we're concerned with all these buzzwords. But it's like, to me, if they were really concerned about it, they would work with the people that are in the Devil's Playground to make that a safe and a better place for them to be. Am I way off base here? I don't know.
No. And, well, you know, one of the biggest issues is that it is, you know, on the side of the city, is that it has now become a huge liability back there, especially after the lawsuit that happened. It pretty much dropped us from any decent insurance, and they've been warned that that needs to be done, needs to be fixed, it needs to be whatever the case may be. What they're focusing on is that. And part of what us homeless advocates of many different groups are trying to remind people and to remind our city is that there are, these people are human beings. It's great and grand. I would love to see the health of that area come back environmentally, but not on the pretense of harming other human beings, you know? You know, we've been fighting for a while for at least like a sanctuary camp or a legal place to be, a legal place to sleep and everything. So it's been an ongoing battle. Their excuse for not supplying like porta potties or anything like that is because if they do that, then they are supposedly saying it's okay for them to be there, which is then a liability against their insurance. So to be humane and morally right, they're, I guess, risking their insurance, which is pretty sad.
Only thing I could add to color it is the time I spent like an hour in that area. I'll never forget it because I heard like this woman kind of not yelling, but she was like trying to be a little bit loud. So she was looking for someone, and I turned and looked, and I'll never forget it. She's coming towards me, riding a bicycle with one leg.
Yes.
Absolutely devastating to me. And just she just was just trying to get by. I mean, I couldn't come up with a better description of that. So to kind of move on, though, I understand the city wants to move the roofless community out of this area. We've talked a little bit about that. And they're drafting new laws and ordinances to allow them to do that or to facilitate them doing it in a more expeditious manner. Can you expand on this for us?
The biggest reason for being at the Eureka City Council last night was that there was a couple of new and enforcing old ordinances to deal with homeless, houseless people's personal property, pretty much giving the city and the Eureka the right to move and remove their items. And so there was a few different things on that ordinance that would, you know, like they could do for some items. They could put like a 24-hour notice thing on there and then come back for it if it hadn't moved. And then like they were going to store them into like 60-gallon whatever. And whatever doesn't fit in the 60-gallon tub, they don't have to really take care of. That's an issue on its own. These are people's personal items.
Right.
Also, there was the one that really scared me personally was there was the bulky item thing. And in that, the statement put in there would be that it would be on the discretion of the police officer what a bulky item was, and that could be removed without notice.
Yeah, that's pretty vague. I would agree.
Oh, yeah. I don't, you know, it's there's not many people I would personally myself would respect anybody's opinion of what they believe is, you know, trash and not trash.
And then that puts the police oftentimes in a crazy position too. Someone might call and say, I want you to move this. Now they gotta be the bulky police, you know. It's just like, it's kind
of
crazy.
And that's part of the thing is that homelessness and houselessness is not a police problem.
Correct.
It should not be a police problem. Mm-hmm. I remember that there was a time that I've talked to Chief Mills, and during the discussion, there was a side conversation going on, and he was saying, you know, I'm a police officer, not a social worker. And that was kind of,
Yep.
Exactly. It shouldn't be their job to do this. Eureka has been working with a firm called Focus Strategies. Now, that's an entity of its own in another discussion. But as Eureka City Council, they had said yes on setting up the Housing First eventually in Eureka. So thus far, we've spent about $100,000 to this firm. And in October, they're supposed to come with our housing stock, and then we're supposed to figure out a way to implement better housing to people. So the fact that they want to do these kind of disturbances now is really premature. And a lot of us, our stand was, you have told us to be patient with Focus Strategy coming with what our housing options are so that we can get these people housed. And so my biggest thing was, then you need to be patient with us. You know, this isn't fair. You know, you've told us, you know, hold on, you know, we're gonna get this going. Luckily, the wonderful thing, what happened wasn't, you know, picture perfect of exactly what I would want, you know, my utopia of how I would have wanted the evening to end. But the fact that we got it to be able to be tabled until January, which at least gives a couple of months after focus strategy comes back.
Sensible.
To then look at this ordinance again.
But what was the tenor in the results from the city council meeting in Eureka last night?
There was a lot of passion and a lot of frustration on just in the council themselves. Just recently, we've gotten a much more, what I would call, compassionate and humane city council. We have three very strong women that they obviously want to try to do the best before resorting to anything that could hurt somebody. What was painful to watch and to be part of is to see them and some of the city power heads being able to continuously repeat, this is not a homeless thing, this is a property management thing. And that hurt because, you know, the people out there aren't a weed.
Exactly.
You know?
Right.
They're human beings. And you're talking about removing their property. You've got to give them an exit plan. Some of them have been able to follow some of the exit plans that are available now.
Mm-hmm.
We may have a lot of different systems here, you know, or services, but a lot of them are inadequate.
So inadequate in one way, not enough beds, because I'm not aware of any substantial beds in that area.
No.
Other than the Arcata shelter, which is kind of like a lottery. I mean,
yes. Yeah, and that's pretty much what we have. We have the Eureka Rescue Mission, and most of their beds don't open till 4 o'clock. And, you know, of course, it's a first come, first serve. And you also can't have your pets, you can't stay with your mate. It's also a religious-based organization, which is very hard for some of the people and stuff. And now we have the MAC. Have you heard about the MAC yet?
No, expand on
okay.
That. That's awesome.
The MAC opened up quite a few years ago and was serving families. And just recently, it did a change. And now it's providing for adults without children. But their main goal is the mentally ill. This was one of those other things that be patient, wait till the MAC opens, you know, and this was kind of this idea that they would be getting these adults without children through and where they can stay with their couple. Of course, they still can't have their pets and stuff. You know, supposedly it's supposed to be built to take 80 people, but at this point they're only technically opening it up to about 40, and so far I don't think they've actually reached the whole 40 because this is a quote-unquote pilot project which we spent millions of dollars into. They want to make sure that it's a success, and to be part of the MAC, there's not an entranceway. You can't just go up to them and say, hey, I'm done being on the streets, or I need your help, you know, please let me in. You have to go through a referral. So you have to either have open door clinic or mental health itself or some sort of service to evaluate you and then put you in. And it is on the form of rapid rehousing, not housing first. And the fact that it actually got open prior to the housing stock coming through kind of makes it, well, you know, I'm not quite sure about it, because how can you only keep somebody for 30 days when we don't have a place to put them after?
Well, exactly. That's the point. I think everyone gets caught up in this little revolving door called transitional housing, where you kind of, and then you get the public kind of thinking, oh, the problem is solved. Well, yeah, it's solved for 30, 60, 96 months, and then they're back out on the street again. So what
exactly
is Eureka doing to actually build up their housing stock?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do know that Rob Humlin, who is our planning director, I believe that's what his title is, a lot of the issue is that there is not many areas zoned for multi-houses, which is what is usually considered affordable housing, or at least has been in previous systems. And so that has been an issue. We've tried to work with the Humboldt County on also trying to see if we can get some more of these properties rezoned for affordable housing. So without that, without the actual land and property, there's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, I know. I'd have to look through my notes, but I will, because I really want to drive this issue as much as I can and communicate it. But I know there's been some laws that were actually passed to try to quell that. That was a typical thing the cities were doing. You would go and ask for help, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, we don't have any zoning. So I know that there was a physical law that passed that said that's not acceptable. You have to have something in your plan for the city or town that says this is where you're going to help to put people that need affordable housing.
Yes. Yes, a lot of that is that political, gosh, I want to cuss, but I won't.
I'll have to edit it out.
the thing is, though, is that, yes, those are supposedly in the general plan, but it doesn't actually have to be implemented. The biggest thing is that they just have to show that they're trying, or that they have a system in place to make this happen at this point. So that's where the difficulty comes. Also, you know, a while back ago, they were told that they had to have places that as emergency areas. So there, the SB2s were made. And, you know, supposedly that's there in case of their emergency. And basically it was created pretty much for, you know, let's say we had a flood. We had something in that kind of realm. One of the big things that a lot of us advocates are fighting for is the shelter crisis declaration. Pretty sure you're really aware of what that is.
Right. Nezzy Wade and folks like that. I know we're working on that from AHA.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. She was actually there last night and presented that this is something that she's doing.
Beautiful. She's a good public speaker, too.
Oh, she is. She is. She's excellent. I love her. I support AHA. I've done things with them, and they get it, you know.
They
truly, truly get it, especially with declaring the shelter crisis. It could make it to where the city or the county is not liable. But I do know that as a city that is trying to build up more towards tourism, having something called a shelter crisis may not be too appealing.
Yeah.
So far, everybody's been very against it.
Yeah, to me, I see just a lot of this kick the can down the road. How can we keep kicking it, you know? And at some point, we got to pick the damn can up. So is there anything around this issue that we've missed, Aaron, or that you may want to elaborate on?
A really, really disappointing thing that happened last night. I had a few of the residents up there with me. They're kind of the leaders and the spokesmen for down there. They don't mind putting their face out there, and I applaud them deeply because so many of our town hate them, you know?
Yeah, I do.
And these are just people that are struggling and who the system has failed them more than once. So, you know, building the trust of them coming out is really hard. And the gentleman, Steve, this was his first time that he actually stood up and spoke. And he went up there, and I was so proud of him. And he talked about, you know, I'm one of those residents. He admitted it to them. And he goes, I'm scared to lose my stuff, you know, what am I going to do, and everything. And, you know, he did his thing, and then he almost pretty much ran out of the building, and one of the news crews caught him and, you know, talked to him downstairs, and we had like a 5-minute break, so I ran down to see where he may have gone to, and there he was standing there talking on the TV for an interview. And, you know, I'm just sitting there, I kind of got into the shadows, and I just watched, and I watched with just so much happiness, you know, because I'd also told them, I said, come on out, you're going to have allies. There was a lot of allies out there.
Yeah.
And then he was still shaking, he was so nervous, so, you know, he decided not to come back in, so he stayed out with another friend and everything, and that was fine, and his girlfriend was in there with me, and we're sitting next to each other, and at the end of it, there's another time that the council can make comments, and it just upset me so bad. Melinda Carabellini, I believe is how you pronounce her last name, she chose to use him as an example of anger and rage. She made a statement saying the guy who was up here earlier stating that he was a resident of Devil's Playground, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, you're not a resident. He is not a resident. This is our land. This is our property, kind of thing. And it was, I was so glad he was not in the room.
Yeah, that is a blessing because, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like,
it's crazy.
You know, I looked at his girlfriend and she looked at him like, oh my gosh.
That's the life of a homeless person, though, because the people, they don't feel this societal pull to be kind and courteous to people. If that had been someone that was of power, she would have put forward an entirely different way of presenting that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You know, it just, it hurt me because it took a lot. It took a lot of guts, and there was no respect in the manner. Mm-hmm. You know, you may not be happy that they're back there. You may not like whatever it is you think is going on back there, but they're still human beings. And to at least give the, you know, thank you for your truth, but I do not, you know, I don't go for it. That's fine. But then, you know, that took a lot of courage. That took months and months of him being with Friends at the Marsh to do that. So that was hard.
Well, thank you for your words, Erin. That was beautiful. I hope to get to meet you sometime. I have a heart for Humboldt. I love Humboldt County, and I know a lot of the folks up there. And I'm very happy that there's folks like you and others up there that are watching out for folks that need to be watched over.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right, that was Erin Terrell Powers, and big shout out to the folks up in Humboldt County and all the great work that they're doing. Wanted to say that the opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or the volunteers. Want to let you know again, you're listening to the Without a Roof radio program, a monthly show here on KZFR 90.1 Chico, California, that airs the first Thursday of the month from 6 o'clock to 7 p.m. Once again, a big thank you to Erin and all the friends and advocates in Humboldt County. And just to kind of shout out to AHA, which stands for Affordable Homeless Housing Alternatives. Want to do a little bit of a background, a little bit of opinion here on this, what we just listened to. But one thing to point out of the conversation, actually was on the intro from the news broadcast, was the D word, development. The city has plans for the area, and it doesn't include the people who have been using this as a safe space. Now that there is financial incentive, the city is moving in to move them out. This is a play that I've seen in every county I've done Without a Roof work in. Comanche Creek here in Chico, they're doing the same exact thing. A more dire situation happened in Yuba City back in 2012 where homeless people were literally burned out of a riverfront park. Yolo County is the most recent one, which seems to be a more pleasant result. But they had this big area called the boat ramp, not unlike the Devil's Playground, where people had been staying there 20 years. They had basically almost an eminent domain. Once again, Yolo County had ideas and developers had come forward that they wanted to use the property, and all of a sudden people are concerned about the homeless people. I think it's time that we view human beings, as Erin says, as something far more valuable than a weed. Let's work together, get people help simply because it's the right thing to do, not because there's development coming in and we need to move people out. I'll also sing the praise of Erin's comment that roofless people's health and safety is not a police issue. Sadly, the programs that focus on social work, treatment, housing, and other programs that assist people in poverty have been drastically cut. And in some instances, simply don't exist. Most of these same communities find the way only to increase police presence and enforcement to deal with this issue. It's frustrating. And, you know, I think you heard that in Erin's voice. And I know you hear it in mine because I'm hearing this live on KZFR 90.1. On that note, I'm going to bring on a poet that's kind of going to cement everything we're talking about, that Without a Roof met and interviewed at the Humboldt Edge, which is a wonderful street newspaper that's been out about 15, 16 months now. They had a get-together fall of 2014, celebrate their first year. And this physical poet, some people have called her an angel, because basically she did this interview and then people never saw her again. Enjoy.
My name is Ann Anybody, Anywhere USA. Today is the first time I've ever been in Eureka. I'm staying in Arcata at the homeless shelter. I have a stack about that big that you can't hardly read because the paper is disintegrating. And I'll try to read the homeless one, and we may have to call it quits on that. Sundown makes me shake and shiver. I'm cold until the dawn. The sun will dry away the chill, and I can bask in the warmth of the day. I am the nation's homeless. The ones you don't seem to see. I sleep in the alleys and woods, hidden away from the harassment that comes from fear and misunderstanding. And I walk up and down, speaking aloud, to make you think I'm crazy so you won't bother me. Or I move in the shadows and dwell in my silence. There are many of us all around, and it can happen so suddenly, striking like a disease in the prime of your life, or moving in slowly with age, weakening your grasp on all you hold dear, until there's nothing to warm you. And all this familiar is gone. Pray for me and for yourself that it doesn't happen to you. Treat me as though you might walk in my shoes.
God bless you, man.
God bless you.
I'll give you a hug. Such a
good and that one I wrote in 1978.
Yeah, I'll have to say before we get into Abby Samuels' wonderful kind of tag along here as far as the sleep freedom sleepers down in Santa Cruz, I have to say I've interviewed hundreds of people. I have over 400 vignettes, and God bless you and anybody. I will never forget that woman as long as I live. All right, here we go. Hi, this is Bill Mash with Guillermo Mash with KZFR Without a Roof program, and I'm very, very pleased to have Abby Samuel, who's dialing in from Santa Cruz, to give us some updates on an action that they've been doing down there, camping out, sleeping out in support of our roofless community down there in the Santa Cruz area. So welcome, yes. Abby. Maybe you could give us a little
Thank
thumbnail
you.
On what's going on down there, and we can expand on that.
Yes. So last night, I'm working on 1 hour sleep, so please excuse me if I don't sound very concise here, but last night was our eighth sleep out since July 4th. We've had anywhere from 30 to 60 people sleep out, and basically we do it once a week during our city council days, and we're protesting the criminalization of the homeless. And what else can I say? I could tell you that there's the police come every single time. That's why I haven't slept very much. They tell us to get out of the park. They're calling the city hall a park. And if we don't, then they give us citations. But we have found a workaround, which is there's certain areas where you can lay down. Now we're camping out on half of the sidewalk without blocking the sidewalk. And they're not sure what to do with that because that's not against the law in this particular zone where we're by a government building. So that's one workaround. And the reason it started is because of a homeless services center here in Santa Cruz. Used to house more people. They had emergency services serving food to over 3,000 meals a week, and that is gone. Just now it's to just people that are in there, that are staying there with, that have shelter, that have ways to transitional housing. They are not doing any emergency type housing anymore. And their people's showers were taken away. People have no place to shower. The meals, they do have mail service. And there's quite a few other things that have been taken away, toilets and things like that. So it's just horrendous what's happening, and they keep on cracking down more and more. And with this latest thing, I don't know if people know about this, about the Boise versus the Department of Justice made a ruling. It's not actually a ruling. It's called a statement of interest where they state that it's unconstitutional to criminalize, to ticket, to cite, to arrest any person who does not have the potentiality of having, or does not have any place to go to sleep, does not have a shelter. So if all the shelters are full and you are getting a ticket because there's no other place to sleep, this is cruel and unusual punishment, because basically you are saying your status as not having a home, then you are a criminal, basically. So that's a new, not a ruling, it doesn't set precedents, but we're hoping that this is going to change things in the in the U.S. And this was just decided a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Bell versus Boise. I know there's John McClain, who does Safe Place out in Safe Park. I knew I'd get that right. Out in Tucson, it was the one that kind of gave me the information on that. And I think it's just hopefully the government's first step to kind of say, look, you can't just criminalize human beings for physically existing and breathing and walking. So tell us a little bit about the citations you guys got last night, and maybe give us an understanding of what the heck it feels like to be sleeping in this space, being harassed by the police.
Right. Well, I'd say at the beginning there was a little more people that have houses that have houses versus those that don't, that were camping out. And then there's a period where there are more people without homes, and now they're cracking down even more. So it's about split with people with homes and people without. I'm one of the fortunate people that do have a home. So basically, I get to experience what it is to be sleep deprived. I have a job. I want to keep my job, but it's so difficult being sleep deprived. Also, having to go to the bathroom, we have one bathroom that they made 24 hours for a very short trial period, and I had to go to the bathroom about two sleepouts ago, first thing in the morning, and I had a car, so I got in my car to drive as quickly as I could to get there, which was only around six blocks away, but I would have never made it there. I was about to have an accident. Both stalls were full. I begged them, please, I'm going to have an accident if you don't get out. That's what they deal with day to day, survival. And when people say how dirty they are, they, you know, go to the bathroom out in the streets. Well, where, if you don't provide bathrooms, what do you expect? What do you expect? So...
Yeah, that hurts my heart too, because it's like they're human beings and they should be treated with dignity and respect. So you take away any ability that for them to do that, and then when they have to live and exclude things from their body because they're full, it's like, see what they just did? It's crazy. It's just like some sort of high school, some cruel schoolyard game that's going on. Now you say you do it on the same night as the city council. Do you guys physically get involved with the city council process on those nights?
They were out of session when we started in July. So in August we started, they do it twice. They have regular, the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, and sometimes they have special ones on different Tuesdays. So we started it on Tuesdays in August, and our first one, when the city council was in session, we got out there and did a chain of about eight of, we call ourselves the Freedom Sleepers, which I'll explain in a second. We did a chain where we read the pertinent point of the Boise versus Bell case, and so we just read it to the city council. And the last time a couple people would get up there and speak, they know who we are. We call the Freedom Sleepers, and the reason we came up with that is because one of our members who co-founded it with us, his name is Rabbi Phil Posner. He was a freedom rider in the 60s. He spent 39 days in penitentiary fighting for the rights, civil rights for the black. So this is our fighting for the rights of the homelessness, homeless, for the people without homes.
How long have you been involved in this effort, Abby, and how'd you get started, helping people that don't have roofs?
Yeah, basically with Food Not Bombs, I'm new at activism. I've only been doing it since Occupy, and Occupy just really was so inspiring to me. It changed my life. And it feels like this is my long life passion. And I wanted to do something that felt, at the end of the day, even if you did a protest or a march and you feel like, oh, well, I don't know if that made an impact or that did anything. With Food Not Bombs, you actually get to feel some sense of completion that some people got to eat. So that's what I love about Food Not Bombs. I've been doing that for about 2 years. And Keith McHenry lives part-time here. He's my partner, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and he lives part-time here. I was doing it before we actually got together, and he actually got two citations last night. Oh, you asked me about the different citations. Sorry, this is no sleep. Mm-hmm. He received the first citation, being in a park after hours, which is our city hall. We don't understand why it's called a park. We should be able to protest there. So they almost arrested him, but And then the second ticket he got was, they gave him a stay-away order. Now, a stay-away order, about 15 people got tickets last night in park after hours, but no one received a stay-away order. They picked Keith out because he was doing all the food for Food Not Bombs and giving out, you know, dinner all hours, like 7 hours straight food for anyone who wanted it. So the stay-away order is something new this year. It's an ordinance which something says where Parks and Recreation or first, you know, our alarm company, they can just tell you, or the police can just say, you are not allowed in this park for 24 hours. And if you come back, we will cite you again, and you can't go back in a park for, or this park for a month. And then it gets bigger and bigger. For 6 months, you have to stay away for a year every time you break it. And it's, to me, it's totally unconstitutional because there's no due process. You don't go to a judge. They just decided a whim, and they picked him out of all the people. So he got a stay-away order. He got a in-park after hours. And then he decided, well, instead of sleeping on the sidewalk, I'm just going to sleep in the street because they blocked. Oh, last night they decided to put emergency lights. So now they have emergency lights shining all over the park with that really loud sound of the generator going on all night with the light. And so they blocked off part of the streets by putting the meters, the cover on the meters, so we couldn't park our cars there, which was actually great because then people can see us more as they drive by. So Keith said, well, since you can't park here, I'm going to sleep here. So he slept there, and they had 5 police cars come and give him a ticket, and that was around 5 in the morning. So that's why I haven't slept. It's just constant harassment.
So it seems like they singled out Keith because they have his background. They know he was one of the people that are, quote-unquote, helping to organize it.
Yeah, he's a main organizer, especially with the food. But he only lives here part-time, like I said. And so when he leaves in a couple of weeks to go back to Taos, New Mexico to do Food Not Bombs Free School, then basically there won't be as long of a dinner. It'll just be snacks at night for people. But, you know, he loves cooking, so a lot of people come just for the food.
Oh, it's a big, big deal. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. You know, it's a very big deal. So have you presented the city establishment with any set of demands? I mean, how's this going to play out? How long are you guys going to be camping here every week, and what are you asking of the city?
Well, that's a real interesting question because basically what Freedom Sleepers is about stop criminalizing the homeless. But we are not have a specific demand. There's people in our group that have specific demands that are from different groups. So, for instance, one wants to have a park designated, and then we can move from park to park every day, every 24 hours. That's one top proposition. For me, I want the sleeping ban, camping ban removed because it's unconstitutional. And that's what I want, but people are telling me it's unrealistic because we have right now a really right-wing city council, unfortunately. We only have 2 people in there that would fight for the homeless people here out of 7. And so right now we have this vigilante group that really has a strong following here that are getting really strong right-wing people into the city council, and it's killing us.
So I had posted something yesterday about, you know, what I'm seeing in my area of sphere of influence in Butte County and up in Northern California. But I really feel as if we need to be in public space more, and I really commend yourself and others for doing that. I think we need to start pushing the legal system because it doesn't seem there's many areas where you've got the legislative will and the police officer will and the business will to actually ever deal with this problem. I hate, you know, but what would you say to that? You guys got any lawsuits in mind or anything that's pending? Or
We need to find a lawyer. This is what we need. We have, right now, I have an attorney for a different case that I can't go into, and I made a deal with him last week. Not made a deal with him, but I asked him to help me on this little infraction ticket for in-park after hours, and he's going to check on the constitutionality of it. But we need a real strong lawyer. We're just so busy trying to do this, it's hard to try to find someone that can help us. I know there's an attorney in L.A. that just won a really big case. I forgot her name. Keith knows her. He won a case for Food Not Bombs years ago, but she won $1.1 million on in L.A., I believe, for possessions being taken away. I think that's what it was.
It's $1.1 million, like general police harassment of homeless people for existing. Exactly what you're trying to make sure doesn't happen in Santa Cruz.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we want to contact her. We haven't had time, and this is we really need to get a lawyer involved to figure out what to do next. But yes, that's what we've got to do.
Yeah, I know. I tell people, you know, anytime that someone tells you being homeless is a choice, ask them why only poor people make that choice. But the flip side of the corollary to that is many, many people that are involved trying to help the homeless are not people of substantial means. In other words, if homeless people had the financial backing of, say, a typical financial backing of like the NRA or some of these major groups, we'd be talking about a whole different set of issues. But you know, when you get into the grassroots level or really trying to help people, Abby, I know I'm speaking to what's going on for you and me here. It's just like, man, you're just trying to, you know, keep your head above water to help the people that really need your help, because there's hundreds of them everywhere. You know, what could you say to that?
One of the things we're doing, I'm starting to feel like we're almost like a union for
there you go.
The homeless. Like, we're giving out cards. It's called I Am a Freedom Sleeper, and on the back of it, it tells you what the Eighth Amendment is, and that it's a human right to be able to sleep. Can't remember the exact words, but basically it says... here, I'm getting the card out
now. There you go, live really on cool. KZFR. Abby's got the card. That's a wonderful thing, by the way. That really helps people in many, many ways.
Yeah, it has all our information on the front. It says, I'm a freedom sleeper, supporting the right to sleep. And then it has all of our contact information and an 800 number that goes directly to Keith. And for those people that can't afford to make a phone call and they're near a payphone. I didn't know payphones still exist, but they do. And an avoidable consequence of being human violates the Eighth Amendment. Sleeping is a life-sustaining activity. It must occur at some time in some place. If a person literally has nowhere else to go, then enforcement of the anti-camping ordinance against that person criminalizes her for being homeless. That was taken out of the what the Eighth Amendment is. And that's what we give to all the people, all the homeless people around here, and they can feel a little more powerful. Some of them are signing their tickets, and they write down they're breaking the Eighth Amendment.
plus, it also lets them know there's somebody behind them, you know, and that is so, you know what I mean? They know the Freedom Sleepers are there. They know that Keith's there. They see you guys in space. That is so much power and so much help for people that are down and out. It can't be emphasized on a radio program. You have to be out there and physically see this. It's amazing.
And they're getting really scared. I mean, to put those emergency lights out there, we were told I don't know if First Alarm is California National or just a local company, but it's our security alarm company that stands there. And they were actually great last night. They felt almost supporting us. And they were telling us, and one of them told me that, hey, they're looking for anything to do wrong. Like if you smoke a cigarette, then they'll give you a stay away. They're just looking for anything to really turn, just discredit us. And they've done so many things to try to trash home with us. We do not leave anything. We clean everything up. And yet, in the paper today, there was the mayor said that we were great at representing our homeless issues because he's more a little more progressive than the rest of the city council. They're the ones that are showing the problems with our homeless problem here, but as you can see, they're also showing how trash is left behind, and it's unfortunate because that's a lie. So
this maybe
morning what we did is we had a city, we went into, I called Keith and I said, Keith, because I had to go to work, why don't you walk into the city council and have them walk around the perimeters and show them there's no trash so they can't lie next time.
There you go. So maybe a good way to end this wonderful conversation. I thank you again on 1 hour sleep, Erin. You've been I think you've been more coherent than I have. how could our listeners help you, and how could our listeners help the folks in their own area with the folks that are roofless? What would be some suggestions you would have?
Well, what we would love, the first sleep out we had, we brought 40 sleep. Out of my own money, I spent like $400 getting sleeping bags for about, I don't know how many sleeping bags there were. And it was such a great thing. But, of course, those are all gone. So we need money to buy more sleeping bags and things like that, blankets and things like that. If you go to freedomsleepers.org, it's a brand new website. Hopefully it works. You should be able to, there's a button on there that that tells you you can do a PayPal button that you can contribute to us so we can buy more things.
Wonderful. We'll get that out there. And then the more an obvious thing to me, too, is the more people sleep in there, the more pressure it puts on them. If they showed up next week and there was 1,000 people sleeping there, they might actually start going, oh, this is something we need to deal with. You know?
Yes.
Abby, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Keep up the great work there. And say hi to Keith. I've met Keith. I did an interview of him in Chico here a couple of years back. Anyways, tell him Bill Mash, Guillermo Mash says hi.
I will tell him that, Bill. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Alrighty. Cheers. All right. Bye.
Thanks.
I'm really pleased to have Sandra D in the house. She's going to be doing Beatle Nation tonight, Sandra. I called her a super sub. I see Sandra a lot. Thanks for all your support, KZFR volunteer. Real quick, Freedom Sleepers' mission is to repeal the camping ban in Santa Cruz, California, and they already have their next week's event. These people are in this for the duration on Facebook. They can also be visited at their website, freedomsleepers.org. Next up, we got Keith McHenry's visit to Chico in 2013, FBI proclaimed terrorist.
Keith McHenry, man, he did a wonderful thing out here for Food No Bonds. He's going to give us like 60 seconds on how you, me, can change Chico.
Oh, we need to get out on the streets and talk to everybody, join the local Food No Bonds chapter, try to bring more people out to the meals, and just build more of a spirit here to make like a post-capitalist Chico. That's what we need.
And don't be afraid.
Just get out on the streets, put up flyers all over town, talk to people, organize events, hand out more food, organize community gardens.
All right, this is Monica Bell. She's a grub lady. Is that the best way to describe you?
I work with both the nonprofit and the commercial farm at Grub. So I don't live out there, but I am definitely, I got dirt under my fingernails.
All right, you're standing in front of a map. This is your new project. What do we have here in this map?
So we have the community food production map, and we're mapping both the two most important features of our community's ability to feed itself, land and people. Mm-hmm. So we're mapping land that's growing food for our community or that could be used to grow food in our community, and then also people who are growing food, people who are looking for land to grow food, and people who believe and want to support our community's ability to feed itself.
So you match people up with land. You're a connector for people in land.
Yeah, so our facilitate discussion more than its ability to feed itself through food production. Then also to provide a tool for people who want to connect with people in their community or in their part, their neighborhood, other people who have resources, who have land, awesome. Who have energy. And then lastly, to increase collaboration between those people. Communityfoodproduction@gmail.com.
Awesome.
Or 588-0441. The biggest thing is just to take the survey. Come to the Peace Center, fill out the survey, put yourself on the map.
Bike collectives, take over abandoned buildings, so that that we can't be cowered by the corporations and the state. That it's up to us to change the world. The people that like the way the system is now are not going to help us.
Awesome, give me five.
Okay. Awesome, and end the show real fast because it's going to get right to the top of the hour. Maybe a few seconds over. Gabrielle Duncan is actually going to be on the show next week, and take a listen to her trailer. She has this wonderful short film she's touring the country with Northwest on six different people that experienced homelessness in the Seattle area. Enjoy and listen in next month for the Without a Roof radio program.
I was standing in the driveway and I was looking at my car, and I had $140 to my name, and my unemployment was cut off, so I had no money. I had really nothing to carry on and go anywhere. And I was, trying to pay off these bills, and they were just pointless. It was just pointless at that point. And I just kind of threw my hands in the air and I looked at my car, and I this sudden rush of horror just went through my whole body. And then I started laughing. It was those feelings when I knew I was going to end up living in my car. And I got sick.